you need someone who can keep you up to speed. And that's where we come in.
How do you think it went? I got him on the 1 yard line.
English, please. You know, I don't know baseball.
We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues right here on 105.5, 97.5, The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in with the program. Phone lines and Adams Co-Roofing text line remain open for the entire second hour. We're going to have Grayson Mann from TigerNet joining us for a segment in hour number three via the phones. Looking forward to that for sure. All right, couple texts getting into a lot about rev share, a lot about NIL, a lot about the transfer portal. Another texter's getting into about the portal and how those teams, using the stat about the teams being 27-0. Yeah, I mean, I get that. I also do think it's early, but I do think there's a correlation there to a certain extent. Like, if you get the most talented players and you outbid all these other schools for players that everybody wants,
right,
they're probably going to help you win some football games.
Sure. I think there's validity to the stat. I also think there's validity to the point that there's only three of those wins are against teams that are projected to make bowls this year.
Right. Like, we got to see it. Check back in at week 8.
Right. Like, it's a great Twitter stat, but, you know, let me know once we get into October how it's aging, once teams are actually in conference play.
Yeah, indeed. The last call was from Mike and Anderson asking about kind of like numbers and the transfer portal and what to anticipate. And I'll preface this by saying, this is impossible to project. Like, that's the first thing that's going to come out of my mouth, is this is impossible to give an accurate projection. We're not in the building. We don't know what, you know, general manager Sorrells and his right-hand man, Zach Fulmer, we don't know what those guys are thinking at this upcoming offseason. We don't know what Kevin Kelly is thinking for this upcoming offseason. We don't know what they've identified as their primary positions of need. We're not in the brains of 18 to 22-year-olds as to, like, where they could
right.
potentially be going, or whether they want to leave or whether they want to stay. There's so many different variables and factors surrounding this topic and conversation that make it very, very difficult to project, in my opinion.
I think that you will see some efforts made at just about every position outside of offensive line. And the reason I say offensive line, I talked about it in the first hour, is I just don't think the available type of talent that you want exist in the portal in a bidding war that you can win. There's not the depth of bodies at offensive line like there is at corner and at wide receiver and at safety and at defensive line. Like, it's just, when those guys are good, they don't leave their programs.
Correct.
So I do think you're going to see some, you'll see some churn. But in terms of, like, predicting who, I have absolutely no idea. Like, I'll give you an example as to what makes this difficult. What if the waiver passes that gets Tristan Smith another year of eligibility?
What if the fifth-year legislation passes and Cade Klubnik has another year of eligibility? That's a conversation this summer. The 5-5 legislation could pass this summer, which could grant every senior on Clemson's roster an additional year of eligibility, and then you're having a completely different conversation.
Correct. What if Antonio Williams decides not to go pro? We all just assume he's going pro.
Yeah.
Like Avion Terrell, or even...
What about Will Helt, right? That's
right,
a guy that's played his way onto draft boards. What if he goes when you're expecting him to stay?
Or, on the other side, what if 11-3, who thought they were going to be top 10 picks, don't get the grades that they want and they choose to come back? Like, there's so many things that are going to occur between now and the end of the season that I'm not trying to shoot down the question by Mike whatsoever, because I do think there will be some numbers brought in. But in terms of trying to predict, like, I did a segment with Kwok yesterday, and we were going through the numbers of each position group. And while you're going to need some new bodies, don't get me wrong, I don't know how to project, like, who's going to move forward. Like, who's going to leave the program and go elsewhere. So I do think you will see the biggest use of the portal yet by Coach Sweeney this upcoming offseason. But in terms of, like, numbers and which group is going to be the heaviest, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I'm not there yet either.
Like I said, I'm not trying to shoot down the question, because it's a very fair question to ask for a 1-3 football team right now. but I don't know that I can answer it accurately.
Right. Like, you have a lot of dudes that are juniors that will have 1 year of eligibility after this year or two if the legislation passes that have decisions to make, right? And a lot of these guys have dealt with injury adversity, and then you've got the depth pieces that are backfilling the roster. You also have to account for the numbers game with the incoming freshmen. So check back in with me, Mike, after week 8 to 10, and maybe we can give you a little bit better of a depiction of what the roster could look like next year, because you still got 8 ball games to play, and to be frank, I think it's a kind of a pointless exercise to speculate at this juncture as to who could be on the team right next year versus who couldn't. Like, I don't want to wish cast anything on 18 to 23-year-old student-athletes when I'm not in the building and I'm not in their brain to know what the thought process is.
Exactly.
And I'd also like to take the optimistic and hopeful thought that everybody's going to stay, just to be honest with you. I would. So hopefully that happens for the majority of teams. 654-ROAR is the number. A couple texters get in. And if this season stays this bad, I think we will see the most transfers out of Clemson ever. I think there's a logical conclusion to draw with that, yeah. But then again, like, what if you turn it around with a different group of players, right? What if some of these depth guys start to play in the secondary and they get a taste of that success at Clemson and they're walking into starting roles and they progress and they develop throughout the course of the season? What if a guy like Gideon Davidson gets the opportunity to get some burn and all of a sudden he looks like a star caliber running back? These wide receivers, we mentioned the JUCO year with Tristan Smith. Well, what if TJ Moore goes on the tear of his career down the stretch and we're having a completely different conversation, right? There's just so many different things that can happen in the remaining 8 games to the point where I don't like to speculate as to what the roster could look like next year at this juncture.
Especially when we have such a loaded slate upcoming this weekend.
Yes, exactly.
We're all frustrated about Clemson. I get it, but there are other teams and other leagues that are playing.
Very true.
There's more football for us to break down than what is the portal going to look like when the window opens in January.
And on that note, we've got a great weekend and a great slate of games. John, I've been trying to tinker my way through this pick'em contest. We both kind of spoiled our pick, and obviously we'll give our full pick'em picks tomorrow. But we're both on the Georgia Bulldogs in the pick'em this weekend in that big-time matchup against Alabama. And I do want to start with trying to dive a little bit deeper in the weeds in the ACC tomorrow night, if you're good with that. Let's talk a little FSU versus Virginia. 654 Roar if you want to get in. Ted, Knowles fan, if y'all are out there, we'd love for you to check in on this. Were you surprised to see Florida State as a 6.5-point favorite on the road? And if so, did you take them in the contest or did you take UVA? You still have till 1 p.m. to change, but I originally sent in UVA and I updated my picks about 30 minutes ago and I've changed to Florida State. I think this is going to be Florida State by double digits, but I do think Virginia is going to give a very, very competitive showing.
I think this game is very uncomfortable at halftime for Florida State fans because I think Chandler Morris in this offense, they're going to go. The points are going to be scored here. As much as I like what Tony White has done so far this year, I think Chandler Morris and this group are still going to get theirs. I just don't know if they have the athletes in the second half. And that if Mike Norvell and this coaching staff, if they can make some really good halftime adjustments, I also think they can have the ability to run away with it. I think this is a very tough spot for Florida State. I think this spot's going to tell us a lot about this team. Because they haven't been on the road, and they haven't really been in a competitive football game since Alabama in week 1. I have some pause about that. What we saw against East Texas A&M and Kent State is going to replicate itself. But they're going to score some. Like, I'm not trying to make out the UVA defense to be the 85 Bears or anything like that, because they certainly are not.
Yeah.
But I think Virginia is going to score. I think this is like a fourth quarter pull away. I think Florida State wins by like 10.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I settled on this. I just, like, we got a texter in here, Florida State by 21. I don't see that. I don't see that here. I mean, Tommy Castellanos, your boy, has thrown 38 passes this year. Only completed 27 passes. I worry that if he has to throw it a ton about Florida State here. I think if they can stay ahead and really, really run the football, then they'll be good and we'll cover. But Virginia is going to make them sweat. There's no doubt about it.
I think the big key to this one is turnover margin, and that can be said for 95% of football games. But I think the importance here is at a premium for Virginia. It was part of what I said yesterday. I don't trust Virginia's ability to be able to consistently slow down or stop Florida State. With that being said, I agree with your assessment that Tony Elliott, Des Kitchens, Chandler Morris, the rest of the crew on offense there, they're going to put up some points. Like, Virginia put up 48 points on Coastal. They put up 31 in a loss at NC State, which they really should have won, and Morris threw the game away down the stretch. That should have been a 38-35 win for Virginia. They had every chance to go get that one up in Raleigh. They put up 55 on William & Mary and called out the Dogs. They put up 48 on Stanford last week. This is their third straight home game. They've had a couple of extra weeks to prepare because the two prior opponents on the schedule were freebies, in all honesty. Here's the thing for me. Florida State has not had to show a lot of intricate things on tape. They got an early lead in the game against Alabama, and they were able to sit on the ball and run it. I think Tommy Touchdowns had like 9 completions, right? Because he was running, and they were using a lot of that QB counter stuff to get him in space, and they were trying to use a lot of the screen game and the run game, and it was a very successful path for success for them. There's more tape against warm bodies available on Virginia's offense than Florida State's offense, and that's a part of my take in this, you know, current moment, because we have limited data points, we have limited sample size, teams are still establishing identity. I think the advantage goes to Florida State, with the amount of tape accessible on Virginia in comparison to the inverse. And I also think that Florida State's the better and more talented football team from top to bottom. This offense, John, is a run-and-shoot offense by every essence of the classic term. I'm going to read off the average depth of target for some of these wide receivers so far this season, okay? You ready? Squirrel White, 29.3. yards, average depth of target. Mekhi Dansey, 25.5 yards, average depth of target. Elijah Moore, 21.3 yards, average depth of target. And then you got Javon Boggs, who's a little bit banged up right now, 21 yards, average depth of target. Deuce Robinson's at 14.3. You don't have a receiver in the rotation that is not above 14 yards of average depth of target, and 4 of your top 5 guys are above 20. Florida State wants to lull you to sleep with the run and then take the freaking top off with Tommy Touchdowns.
Do you have the, like, per-game splits?
I'm not sure if I have per-game.
Because I think this is what part of what Gus Malzahn does. Kwok talked about this yesterday. I agree with some of the points he was making. They run the score up on absolute nobodies.
They do. That's a part of this. I agree.
So while I appreciate the data, I'm going to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt because I could go get 20 yards of separation against Kent State and East Texas A&M. Like, they're just... I would like to know more of what it was like against Alabama. Now, they won that game. They dominated the game. I'm not trying to take away anything that Florida State did against Alabama. But when I look at their numbers overall through the season, I think they're a little fraudulent.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair. I think the data has definitely been skewed. They were at like a Tommy Touchdowns is like a 16.9 yards average per completion against Bama, but again, the last two opponents have skewed that number a little bit higher. Like, Florida State is currently on pace to have the best offense in the history of college football. That's not an exaggeration, but again, they've played two nobodies in a row and they put up 77 and 66 in back-to-back weeks, right?
So, like, how much of that is one, this is Kwok made a good documentation yesterday. It's kind of what Gus has done in history, but two, like, yeah, they're going to run it up. Man, they went 2-10 last year. You want people to feel good at home. I get it. I'm not trying to really shoot down a lot of what Florida State has done this year. I'm just saying that some of those numbers, I'm taking them with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and I think that's more than fair. I think that's going to be the intriguing part of this game is if Virginia can get an early lead and turn Castellanos into a true passer of the football and get Florida State off of script and off of schedule, then maybe there's a chance at an outright victory here for the Hoos. But the reason I liked this Florida State team so much in the preseason and the reason that I said I was back on buying in with the buyback was their ability to control the game with Gus Bus. And I'm just going to be honest with y'all right now. There's not a lot of teams in the country that can beat Florida State if you're going to have to play from behind against this team. The first quarter is the most important quarter in every game Florida State will play all season. If you give Gus Bus the lead and you let him run the football and lull you to sleep so he can take the top off with those play action beaters and use Castellanos in the run game with his legs, which is his best trait, you will lose to Florida State. This game against Miami next week, that's super intriguing to me because Miami's got great lines of scrimmage play, and guess what? They're trying to do exactly what Florida State's trying to do. They want to run the ball. They want to get an early lead. They want to let their defense get after you, and they want to play physical. I just think there's so many storylines with this Florida State team at the end of this week. I really enjoyed watching them play through three games so far this season. Watching Gus call a game is just awesome, regardless of where he's at. Super fun coordinator. Castellanos, you guys know back to last year, that's one of my guys. I love watching him play football. I think it's a super entertaining brand and play style. Intrigued. Intrigued is where I'm at. I took Florida State with the 6.5, and I'm going to say 41-28 Seminoles over Hoos up in Charlottesville tomorrow night.
Are you aware that this is a rivalry game with a trophy?
Huh?
I learned about this morning. The Jefferson Epps Trophy. The trophy given to the winner of the series between Florida State and the University of Virginia. The trophy is named, we're all going to learn a little something this morning, for Thomas Jefferson, the founder of the University of Virginia, and his grandson, Francis W. Epps, who was a two-time mayor of Tallahassee. So there is a trophy that has been sitting in Charlottesville since 2019. So can Florida State go up to Charlottesville and reclaim the Jefferson Epps Trophy? Tune in Friday night to find out.
Man, I didn't even know that was a real thing.
I didn't know that until this morning. Stumbled across that.
I'm being a bad ACC member right now with not knowing that. But that's why we educate ourselves. So there you go.
So I know maybe this will help emphasize your point that the South is better than the North because the Big Ten is all their trophies, right, for all those different rivalry games. We got them down here, too.
Oh, yeah.
We got rivalry trophies in the ACC.
Of course. And listen, my dad's from the North. Most of his side of the family's from the North.
Jefferson Epps Trophy.
Give me the South, man. Give me the South over the North any day of the week. It's not even a question.
Oh, boy. Out of context. That's
well,
rough.
Yeah. That's a rough out of context moment. If college football only. College football. College football.
Thank you for the clarification.
Texter gets in and says, biggest Virginia game in years hosting FSU for the first time since 2014. A lot of trophy for a place FSU hasn't been to in 11 years, which is crazy. Like, this is a rivalry matchup with a trophy. And you haven't gone to Charlottesville in over a decade. Was Jimbo Fisher the coach in 2014? Was that his final year, or was it 2015?
He was the coach. He was in the that coach 14 game.
In that 14 game. Okay, so yeah, to show you how now he's on ACC Huddle now with Matt Klein and Tannenbaum. So that's how long it's been since FSU's been to Charlottesville. Really intriguing stuff on the horizon tomorrow. We'll continue to unpack that and more on the other side. Some great games on the horizon this weekend. I hope you got a place to park your butt and watch some college football because that's what I'll be doing all weekend. Stick with us here on The Roar. More breakdowns coming up next.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? It seems impossible to find them, but they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go. And that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. And because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter.com/radio. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
No one wants it to happen to them, but unfortunately, chances are good that at some point, it'll happen to you. Roof troubles. It's one of the most important parts of your biggest investment. So when you need repairs or a new installation, you need someone who you can trust to get the job done right. You need Joe Robertson and Son Roofing.
As a family-owned and operated roofing company since 1965, Joe Robertson and Son have built a reputation for quality craftsmanship. It's why thousands of upstate home and business owners have chosen them for their roofing needs. Beyond providing quality work they're proud to stand by, Joe Robertson and Son Roofing also takes a client-first approach to their job. That means quality roofing, fair pricing, and complete customer satisfaction. Put it all together, and it's easy to see why they're the upstate's premier roofing provider.
You can't cut corners when it comes to roof repairs and installation, so go with the trusted name in the upstate. Go with Joe Robertson and Son Roofing. Get started today by visiting them online at robertsonroofing.net.
I'm Ryan Beasley. My office works with clients in all areas of state and federal criminal defense to include pre-arrest investigations, white-collar defense, as well as student conduct issues at colleges and universities. Our team works in courts across the state to include city court, magistrate court, state court, and federal court. Our responsive and proactive approach in all cases is relationship-driven, client-centric, and resolution-focused. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you. Please give us a call at 864-679-7777 or find us on the web at www.ryanbeasleylaw.com.
This is Leighton Cubbage from Lakeside Lodge, Lakeside Lodge Clemson. Across Lake Hartwell from Death Valley, Lakeside Lodge has every amenity you could want, including Traditions on the Lake restaurant, a pool, hot tub, and fire pit. Stay with us for the weekend or buy your own condo to enjoy anytime and earn income using our managed rental program. Visit ownership.lakesidelodgeclemson.com to start your new game day tradition and go Tigers.
poor indoor air quality can significantly decrease your quality of life through experiencing sinus infections, allergies, respiratory issues, and headaches. An easy-to-install device called UV PhotoMax uses purifying blue light to zap bacteria, mold, and viruses before they enter your home's air vents. Purify the air your family breathes and help protect them from mold, bacteria, and viruses with the UV PhotoMax from Estes Heating and Air. Serving Oconee, Pickens, Greenville, and surrounding areas. Visit ESTESHeatingAir.com today for more information.
Clemson fans, this is your store. The Tiger Sports Shop has the best selection of Clemson apparel, accessories, and game day essentials. Nike, Lululemon, polos, hoodies, hats, tees, you name it, we've got it. Plus, by joining our Tiger Rewards loyalty program, you'll earn points and unlock exclusive perks throughout the season. Shop local at our two Clemson locations or visit us online anytime at tigersports.com. Don't just cheer for the Tigers, wear your pride. The Tiger Sports Shop, your Clemson headquarters.
Go Tigers!
Steve and Jerry here from the world-famous Beacon Drive-In in Spartanburg. The Beacon has served over 300 menu selections of burgers, barbecue, chicken, fish, and more for over 70 years. Jerry, what's been the most popular?
Chili cheese, I ain't playing tight. I need flounder. Cheeseburger like a burger, make it crust. Give me a bacon whip, no trim.
Had a feeling you'd say that. Join Steve
and Jerry
at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In, John B. White Senior Boulevard in Spartanburg.
Hey, playing tight.
Contractors, we know what it takes to build something great. Long days, hard work, and the right materials. At Harbin Lumber Company, we're here to make sure you've got everything you need to get the job done. Since 1917, we've been your trusted partner in building dreams, from framing lumber to finished materials. When you work with Harbin, you're not just getting quality supplies, you're getting a team that's got your back. Visit one of our local lumber yards today, and let's build dreams together.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products are compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want a boost in and out of the bedroom? Hymns has you covered. Introducing a new 2-in-1 approach to level up your game. Tadalafil for better bedroom performance and zinc for testosterone support. Turn things all the way up and find affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hymns.com/joy. That's hymns.com/joy.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
The only place for sports talk of the upstate is right here, every day. We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
Back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues right here on 105.5 at 97.5 The Roar. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in. A lot to discuss. Clemson-related texts getting in. We're talking some more general college football as well. Texter gets in and says, next weekend we will blow out UNC. They suck. And then we'll go to BC and struggle. This team won't take a step forward until a QB change is made. And this is just kind of the one thing I'll say. And I've given my take on the QB situation a million times. If a quarterback change was going to be made, it would have already been made. The time was the halftime of the Troy game, in my opinion. If you were going to make the move, you were going to make the move at halftime of Troy. That's where you were going to give yourself a shot in the arm, down 16-3, 0-1 on the year, down to a Sunbelt school at home, weird weather delay. You're looking for that momentum. I mean, the commentary from Sweeney and Riley both is that they haven't even been close to considering putting Christopher Vezina in the game. And again, you know, I think that there's a lot of reading between the lines that needs to be done by the fan base as to what that means. And I'll leave that comment there for you guys to interpret at home. So if they haven't come close yet with the caliber of quarterback play that you're seeing from the starter, what does that mean about the backup would be the question I ask you at home. And I'm going to let you process that. I'm going to let you think on it, and you can draw your own conclusion. So that's the last thing I've really got to say on the quarterback situation. There's not going to be a change made, and there shouldn't be a change made. 654 Roar, if you want to check in. Let's talk a little more general college football. Maybe we can shift gears to the NFL at some point, too, with a lot of NFL talking points. Actually, let's pivot. I want to take a hard right turn here. I want to get your thoughts on the Jackson Dart situation in New York, because this is something that we see, I would say, fairly frequently where it is a coach with their back against the wall trying to cling to something, trying to show a flash from a young quarterback in order to keep his own job. I think this is a decision that is rooted in job security for Brian Daboll, to be completely candid. And I went back and, you know, a bunch of stuff popping up on social media about Jackson Dart this week. And you know what Brian Daboll said to Jackson Dart when he drafted him? He said, "I'm banking on you." Jackson Dart said, "Smart man. I like the arrogance. I like the confidence with the response. That's what you need at quarterback." But I genuinely think Brian Daboll meant that when he said it. I don't think this was a head coach hyping up the quarterback, head coach trying to instill some confidence in his guy. I think he's banking on Jackson Dart. And I think he's banking on Jackson Dart to show enough this season to where he gets another year as the head football coach of the New York Giants. Is that the way that you view this situation, John? Or has Russell Wilson just been so bad that Dable's hand got forced into making the move? Maybe a combo of both? Give me your breakdown on what's going on in New York, because this was your quarterback last year.
Don't remind me. Russell Wilson's just not very good at this point in time. His decision-making mixed with his regressing physical traits, he's just not the guy anymore. And I think you run the risk of losing the locker room there. It is some job desperation by Brian Daboll. But I also think that he may give you the best chance to win, because Russell Wilson does not give you the best chance to win. We have a 3-game sample size. Malik Nabers, I don't believe he and Russell Wilson see eye to eye on very many things when it comes to offensive execution for the New York Giants. And so I think when you've got a receiver in year two, your best running back right now is a rookie, and you've got a pretty solid front seven, I don't really have any issue with Daboll going to Dart here. A little bit too early for my liking in this season, but see what you have in him. I mean, you're 0-3. Like, nothing else to lose here. Because you drop to 0-4, then that's another wasted season for the Giants. I think you have to do it now, where there's still some life ahead of you.
What do you think about the messaging of going to the rookie in Jackson Dart instead of an established veteran like Jameis Winston, who I think a lot of people were under the insinuation was the backup quarterback here in New York?
He hasn't been. I'm like, he's trying to save his job. Yeah. Jameis Winston hasn't. Like, as much as I've enjoyed the NFL version of Jameis Winston as of late, he's very funny, he's great on social media, like all that stuff, Jameis Winston's not saving Brian Daboll's job.
That's fair.
He's not doing it. So, I mean, I'm a little surprised that they haven't tried to float him out there towards, like, the Bengals or some of these, you know, teams who have already had quarterback issues. But I think this is the best chance for the Giants to win football games is going with the rookie. And not James. As much as I like what he brings as a veteran presence, I think you keep him there as the veteran presence, the one to help Jackson Dart.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, and I think that also, like, based on what we've seen showcased again throughout the course of the NFL career, specifically for Jameis Winston, leadership seems to be an A++. Team camaraderie and unison seems to be an A++, and just like general likability and willingness to mentor seems to be an A++. I'd take that guy in my locker room any day of the week, man. Like, seriously, the way, and listen, a slightly controversial topic that I'm immediately going to put behind me, but I will say this. When the whole world was killing Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston went in front of a camera and defended him for about 3 minutes and talked about his character and talked about his work ethic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a guy that's going to ride for his guys regardless, is the point of that. So regardless of what the media thinks, regardless of what the national perception is, Jameis is focused on the 53 in the locker room and how he can help those guys play more confident football, how he can help those guys become more confident men, how he can help mentor some of the younger players and give his veteran season seasoning and experience and pass that knowledge down to them. So you have your Aaron Rodgers of the world that have been unwilling to lead for about 20 years. It makes it refreshing to see a Jameis Winston where it's like, okay, you know what? My days as a starter are over. How can I make the most of this opportunity and help as many people as I can? And I really have always respected that about Jameis Winston. Have never done a bigger 180 on an athlete. Seriously. From college to pros, have never done a bigger 180 in my life on an athlete. 654 Roar if you want to check in. Texter asked for a breakdown on tonight's Seahawks-Cardinals game. All right. So this is where I'm at. I think that Arizona has a really elite defense, and I don't think that people necessarily realize it yet. I'm really high on this defense. Like, really, really high on this defense. I think the Panthers' second half was a combination of a few things. I think they took their foot off the gas because they were up 27 points at one point, and I think they started to play more soft shells because they had such a massive lead, and they were forcing Bryce to dink and dunk the ball down and just didn't want to give up chunk plays. They just played Shanahan and Mac Jones in that offense that looked pretty darn good the week prior, only gave up 16 points. I know it was the Saints, but you go on the road in the first game of the season for a team that doesn't have a ton of preseason expectations, and you only give up 13 points. Arizona's graded out as a top five defense by just about every metric through three games. You can make the argument that some of that is competition with the Saints and the Panthers, but I tend to believe that the investments in free agency have really paid off for Jonathan Gannon in this front office, and I think that this is a good football team. The issue right now for Arizona, they just lost their starting running back with a long-term injury in James Conner. To further that point, the O-line play has not been great, and they haven't really been able to establish a consistent semblance of a run game throughout the course of this season. It's going to be Trey Benson taking over the workload there. Looking at the data blindly, Conner was averaging 3 yards a carry, Benson was averaging 6 yards a carry. That might be a good thing that they're going with Benson full-time as their workhorse back. Kyler Murray's got to play better. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one target right here for slander. Obviously, I loved Marv coming out of college. I think everybody on planet Earth kind of just anticipated he was going to walk into the NFL and be really good, and that's not necessarily what's happened. I think he had a good, not great rookie year. It was a little underwhelming in comparison to what the expectations were through the draft process, but now you get into year two with Marvin Harrison Jr., and he's got big-time drop issues, and a lot of these drops came on plays that could have won them the game last year. This was never an issue, or last week, rather. This was never an issue in college. This wasn't really an issue last year, so I think there's a little bit of a mental warfare right now going on with Marvin Harrison Jr., but I'll tell you what, tonight, Texter gets in and asks for my plays. Ohio State touchdown wide receiver parlay is what I'd be on. I think it's plus 600 for Smith and Jigba and Marvin Harrison. They're going to find a way to get Marvin Harrison Jr. some red zone targets tonight, and they're going to find a way to try and get that confidence level established because they need him to get to the heights they want to reach this season in Arizona. Marvin Harrison has to be, at minimum, a good NFL wide receiver too for this team to be good this year. The rest of their wide receiving core is Zay Jones, Michael Wilson, and Greg Dortch. That's not good enough. He's got to be the guy. He has to take command of the room. And Kyler Murray would much rather play buddy ball to an explosive guy like Harrison than check the ball down over the middle to Trey McBride. Albeit a great player, you need Maserati Marv, and you need him to not be Mitsubishi Marv, which is what he's been to this point this season. On the Seahawks side of things, Sam Darnold's playing like the best quarterback in the league. Again, three-game sample size, so take it with a grain of salt, but I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is one of the most underrated players in football. I could make the argument that guy's a top 5-7 receiver in the league right now with the way he's playing. He kills out of the slot. He's got a very extensive route tree. He can kill you with multiple different ways, speed, technique, ability to flash with the football, with the ball in his hands, and then you combine that with a really quality run game in Kenneth Walker. You combine that with a quarterback that's playing at a high level. You throw Cooper Kupp into the mix, and a guy like Torrey Horton, who's really started to flash for Seattle.
Love Torrey Horton.
I know that's your guy. Seattle is a really good football team, and I'm not sure people realize it yet. And guess what? I'm going to give the hottest take of the day so far. Baltimore kept the wrong coach. Baltimore kept the wrong coach in Harbaugh over McDonald. And I know that they were not in a position to be able to make that move, and I understand the optics.
Okay, I just want to make sure you emphasize that part. Yeah,
I understand that that is not realistic for a bevy of reasons, but what I'm telling the audience is that if I had a one-for-one pick right now between McDonald and Harbaugh as my head coach, I am 10 times out of 10 taking McDonald, and it's not close. I think this is a franchise on the rise. I think this is a defense that's playing motivated, and I really like this Seahawks team. So as far as a side in this one, I don't really know. I like both teams. I like the infrastructure and coaching staff in both places. I tend to think Seattle's a little bit better. Arizona's at home. This game's usually tight, and this matchup's usually tight. I'm just looking forward to watch. I would take the Ohio State touchdown parlay if I had a play tonight.
Don't hate that. I like Seattle here. I think some of the questionable injury stuff going on in Arizona could rear its head this evening. You have two offensive linemen in Beecham and Paris Johnson who are questionable to play tonight. Zay Jones is out with a concussion. Will Johnson's still dealing with an injury. He's probably not going to go. Also, Nick Emanwori, former South Carolina Gamecock playing for the Seahawks, probably not going to go tonight as well. I like what Seattle's doing. I think they're very well-rounded. Maybe that is a little bit of I had to see it in Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago, the way that the Seahawks came in there and whooped up on my Steelers. But I think the Seahawks team is the real deal.
Yeah. I really like them, man. And I'll tell you, they're a lot better than I anticipated them to be in the preseason. And I think a part of that was my opinion and evaluation on Sam Darnold, right? I think a lot of people made the conclusion that that was majority credit to Kevin O'Connell, the Minnesota Vikings head coach, who's I've deemed him as the rehab guy in the NFL for quarterback play, right? Sam Darnold lights it up last year. They won 14 games. We saw Daniel Jones at one point, and it feels like those guys are not just products or byproducts, rather, of Kevin O'Connell coaching them, but the habits that he was able to instill in those quarterbacks have translated to their next destinations thus far. I think those guys have good coaching infrastructures in their respective places now in Seattle on the offensive side of the ball, and obviously there's good weapons. And then Steichen, who I think is a genius in Indianapolis, deserves a lot of credit for unlocking Daniel Jones. But going back to just Kevin O'Connell, I think the way that he communicates and the way that he supports his quarterbacks is second to none in this league. I mean, if you ever hear, if you guys get a chance before we take a quick break, if you ever get a chance and you're bored for 20 minutes, go watch the mic'd up for Kevin O'Connell for a game. Watch him with Wentz. I watched this whole one with Carson Wentz this last week. And like, this is what leadership needs to look like in sports. It is. Kevin O'Connell, I think, is the best leader in the NFL as far as QBs go, and his relationship that he's able to strike and make those guys feel comfortable and make those guys feel confident. He views it as a play caller and quarterback team. And he reemphasizes that just about every time he can to his quarterback. Every time they're coming back over to the sidelines, hey, we're in this together. I got you. I'm going to put you in a position to succeed. Play loose, play free, play confident. Just love the way that he conducts his business and have a lot of respect for him and the Vikings. But on tonight's game, I tend to agree with John's side of things. I think the Seahawks probably find a way to win a close one with some of the injury adversity for Arizona. But I think Marv and Jackson Smith and Jigba find the end zone. We'll talk a little more NFL, talk a little more college football on the other side. 654 Roar, we'd love for you to check in on the phone lines or the Adams & Co. Roofing text line. You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John.
Currently car shopping? State Credit Union now has auto loan rates as low as 4.25% APR. Plus, you'll have no car payment for up to 90 days, just in time for the holidays. Visit one of State Credit Union's 19 full-service branches or their website, scscu.com, and apply online for your new car loan today. That's scscu.com. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Join us live at Trammell & Mills Law Firm in Anderson on Wednesday, October 1st for the kickoff to Tigers for Tatas. The Mickey Plyler Show starts at 6, followed by Facts on Sports at 9. All proceeds from merchandise sales go to Dabo's All-In Team Foundation. See you there.
We all know and love Eggs Up Grill, but did you know they cater? From brunchy buffets to breakfast samplers, wraps, sandwiches, and salads, Eggs Up Grill has the best catering options in town. Are you a business owner or office manager looking to elevate your next meeting or party? How about a coach looking for your next team meal or box lunches? Visit Eggs Up Grill of Clemson, Seneca, or Greenwood. Ordering couldn't be easier for pickup and delivery through Easy Cater. Just visit eggsupgrill.com and click on the catering button. That's eggsupgrill.com.
It's time to give your lawn the attention it deserves with Carolina Top Dressing. Is your fescue looking thin? Our expert fescue overseeding service paired with aeration is just what you need. But here's the secret. Without top dressing, much of that precious seed goes to waste. Why? Because seed needs soil contact to grow. At Carolina Top Dressing, we make sure every seed finds its place, whether it's in the aeration holes or covered by our premium top dressing mix. Don't let your investment go to waste. Visit CarolinaTopDressing.com to book your service today.
Cigars, cigars, cigars. Tobacco Plus in Greer is home to South Carolina's largest humidor, featuring the finest selection of premium hand-rolled cigars in the state, and at the very best prices, too. And select a smooth, delicious Monte Cristo, Rocky Patel or Cohiba, and relax on your golf outing. Swing by Tobacco Plus in Greer, South Carolina's number one cigar store, located at Exit 60 off Interstate 85. Also serving Georgia and North Carolina with nationwide shipping.
Greenville has a long mattress manufacturing history going back to 1931 when Orders Mattress Company was born. Today, the fourth generation of the Orders family is still making some of the best mattresses in the U.S. Visit Engineered Sleep's one-of-a-kind mattress showroom on Pleasantburg Drive, across from Krispy Kreme, and find your next mattress. Enjoy free in-home delivery, a 100-night sleep trial, and of course, a great night of sleep. Visit engineersleep.com.
Your access to cutting-edge pain relief just got even easier. QC Kinetics is now offering virtual consultations with new patients. If you're living with chronic joint pain, you can meet with a QC medical professional
from the comfort of your own home. This new telemedicine platform is exciting. It's time-saving as well. They can do it by phone. They can do it by video conference. You're going to get one-on-one attention to evaluate your situation, to see if you're a candidate for regenerative medicine, to see if they can get you treatment scheduled right there on the spot for long-lasting pain relief. QC Kinetics, the leader in cellular technology, regenerative medicine, they're helping so many folks right now. If you tried the drugs, tried the steroids, tried the surgery, don't do that. Do it with QC Kinetics right now. Schedule that consultation. Do it online, 864-766-8454, 864-766-8454. Virtual consultation, fast, quick, and easy and convenient. Call now, 864-766-8454.
Danny Ford here for my good friends at Bennett Equipment, who have stood the test of time selling and renting construction equipment for 25 years now. Bennett is one of the top five dealers in the country for Takeuchi compact equipment, and when you deal with Bennett and Takeuchi, you get the quality, dependability, and service you expect and deserve. So call or stop by today and tell them Danny Ford sent you. Take it from me, when you need equipment, buy it or rent it from Bennett.
Carolina legends aren't born. They're handmade in Bo's Real Southern Kitchen. We marinate our chicken for 24 hours in a blend of bold Southern seasonings. Then we hand bread and fry it to crispy, juicy perfection. And that's why they call us the Carolina legend. It's Bo time.
At Certified Diesel, we value keeping your diesel truck running smoothly and efficiently. Located at 2209 Highway 292 in Inman, South Carolina, we specialize in light-duty diesel truck repairs and maintenance. Whether you drive a Power Stroke, Cummins, or Duramax, our expert technicians have you covered. Avoid the hassle of dealership maintenance and choose us for all your diesel needs. Call and visit us today at 864-345-4568 or check out our services online at CertifiedDieselLLC.com.
Are you incensed that you missed one of our daily shows?
And what do we have? We have an altercation of some sort down on the field. Shane Beamer is incensed, irate about something.
Stay calm. You can listen to all of our past shows at theroarfm.com and click on the podcast tab.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. 654 Roar is the number. We'd love for you to check in and join the program on the phone lines or the Adams Co Roofing text line. Our guy Noah gets in on the text line, resident Cardinals fan around this neck of the woods. And he says if we lose tonight, Drew Petzing's getting fired tomorrow. That wouldn't surprise me. I know there's been a lot of frustration the last couple of years with the play calling on the offensive side of the ball for Arizona. I get it. I get it for sure. So, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Admittedly, I'm not super tapped into as like what job security looks like for coordinators outside of my team, but it wouldn't surprise me with some of the complaints I've seen. Yeah, that's definitely valid to an extent. John, on the NFL front, anything else to add on this Thursday night football game? I don't know if this is even worth wrapping back to in the final segment. We just gave like a 10-15 minute breakdown on Cardinals Seahawks.
I mean, that's screen two for me tonight. So
it's ECU on screen
it's
one.
It's ECU Army is the main screen tonight, and it's
like
not
that.
Even close.
I like that, man. I like that. All right, so on the NFL slate, I want to stick here until the top of the hour, and then we can shift gears back to college football. I want to do a little bit more of an in-depth breakdown on what the hell's going on in Atlanta, Georgia. Oh, my gosh. Have you seen some of the quotes from Raheem Morris this week?
No, I do not pay attention to a ton of Raheem Morris's press conferences. What's Coach been saying?
Okay, so getting the quote right here. Kirk Cousins caught a stray. And you're probably thinking, what? Raheem Morris, I don't even understand why or how you would say this, but he comes out with the direct quote when somebody asked if there was any consideration to go to Cousins last week. He said, we're not even close to that point. He won't compete for the starting QB job this week, and that Kirk lost the job last year, and we're not anywhere close to that point this year. Is that not weird? Am I overreacting, or is that not kind of weird messaging to a guy you're paying $40-something million a year to play quarterback to come out and like reinforce that he lost the job and rub some salt in the wound, especially coming off of a shutout?
I don't find that to be that out of line at all, honestly.
Okay, maybe I'm overreacting.
I think it's trying to reemphasize to everybody the belief in Michael Penix Jr. And that may be that they are pointing the blame all at Ike Hilliard and the wide receivers.
Which I think is insane. I think it's absolutely insane.
I mean, Michael Penix said, I have to throw it to the wide open receivers when they're wide open.
Yeah.
If that is a quote that I did see out of Atlanta this week. Like, I understand that, you know, Falcons fans wanted a pound of flesh after that performance in Carolina, and deservedly so. But it's a take I've been saying with Clemson. When the receivers are open, the quarterback has to throw the football.
Agree with that.
And right now, Michael Penix Jr. is just not doing that.
Agree with that. And another thing in Atlanta is we're going to kind of dive a little bit deeper into the weeds on this Falcons stuff, because for the life of me, I don't remember the last time I've seen a midseason wide receiver coach firing. I saw that and I was like, yeah, this is a scapegoat. So TJ Yates is taking over receiving coaching duties. Zach Robinson's moving from the box to the field to call plays. There's just a lot going on right now in Atlanta. There's a lot going on, and to be frank, it's a complete crap show. And a complete crap show in Atlanta, which isn't that far from the norm with the Falcons, in all honesty. But Morris says we need to be more efficient, faster. Zach has been on the field his whole life. He sees the game just as well on the field as up in the box. Being on the grass, he provides a different type of energy when he's down there talking to everybody, wideouts, quarterback, our O-line. All coaches are involved on the headset, but him being around everything will be good for us. And then you continue to just start to see some of the quotes from Morris. We have to score touchdowns, we have to fix our red zone offense, etc., etc., etc. So this is where I really want to dig in on one, you know, quote from Morris and then a conflicting quote from Robinson, the offensive coordinator. Morris came out and said that the offense was too predictable. Then they asked Zach Robinson that, and he said he disagreed with the assessment. Like,
well, I'm not surprised that an offensive coordinator is going to come out and say that he's not trotting out a vanilla game plan.
Agreed.
Especially when he's on the hot seat and his alma mater is looking for a head coach.
I agree. Like, I'm expecting Zach Robinson to defend himself as I would in that situation. But when you combine the head coach and the offensive coordinator publicly disagreeing in back-to-back allocated press conference slots, when you talk about Raheem with the situation that he handled Kirk, which, again, was not my favorite way. Maybe I'm overreacting and being a little bit too sensitive on Kirk Cousins' behalf in that situation, which I'm willing to admit. But when I go back and I watch the tape as well about just the emphasis of the pistol and the predictability of the offense and the way that Michael Penix Jr. is being hindered and none of his skill sets are being accentuated, I just really think that this is going to go up in flames for Atlanta. Like, the more and more we get further into this and the more they continue to run their mouth being the head coach and offensive coordinator, I'm hating the situation in Atlanta, Georgia even more. And the hard part of this, John, I really like the roster. I actually think the roster's pretty damn good, especially compared to the rest of the conference, or the rest of the division, rather. Like, if we're going roster for roster, this is the only roster that can compete with Tampa Bay in any realm of possibility. Carolina's roster isn't good enough. I'm banking on the uptick there with the coaching, and I'm banking on a step forward from the quarterback. New Orleans is the worst team in football. Atlanta's got some pieces, man. They've got four top 10 picks on offense. Their offensive line's grading out as the third best unit in the NFL to date, and their defense is grading out as a top 10 unit. So what's the glitch? The glitch is play calling, in my opinion, with Zach Robinson. And I also don't think the head coach is helping that by any means as well. So I guess my long-winded question to you, are you anticipating things to change with all the different messagings and the firings and the changing of roles from the box to the field? Or do you think this is just going to continue to be a disaster in Atlanta for these Falcons?
I think it's another football season for the Atlanta Falcons. It's not going to go well. I think some of the pieces are good here. I do think that Kyle Pitts is an athlete. He's not a tight end. I think we need to come to grips with that. I think there's a lot of disconnect here. I don't think this is a unified team. I think this is a team that throws in the towel the second they have to see a kicker. I think this is a group of individuals that some of the individuals I like, but in no way is this a team.
Yeah. I actually agree with that assessment, and again, I think that kind of starts with coaching, right? And when Falcons fans were kind of jumping down my throat in the preseason when I picked them to finish third in the division, I reemphasized and reinforced the point repeatedly that it had nothing to do with the roster, that this was entirely a coaching-related issue in Atlanta, and I still think that that is the issue. And John's point of not being in unison and not appearing to be a collective unit or being a team that's cohesive, I think that starts at the top, because in the NFL, it's just as important to be able to manage the egos and manage the locker room as it is to call the X's and O's. Example, we don't all love the guy. I've been critical of the guy. Nick Sirianni clearly knows how to make his players play hard for him. And that is his undeniable biggest trait to the Philadelphia Eagles, because the Lord knows he can't call plays. I think the Eagles are 2-7 in Sirianni's career in the 9 games he called plays before he handed off duties to Steichen. Sirianni's not an X's and O's guy. He doesn't have an intricate understanding of that level of the game, but what he does do is provide a leader at the front of, or the head of the snake, rather, that can motivate, that can keep guys in check, and that's going to make people play hard.
A leader that 365 days ago, Eagles fans wanted to publicly crucify in the middle of downtown Philadelphia.
This is true. Yeah, this is true. And it's a high standard in Philly, and I'm not denying that, but Nick Sirianni's got the highest win percentage in NFL history in the amount of games that he's coached to start a career, which is unfathomable because, again, I don't think he's some X's and O's savant or guru like McVay or O'Connell. I think he's just a rah-rah guy. And you know what? That's what the Eagles need with the infrastructure they have in place with the roster. Loaded team. You need a rah-rah guy to make those guys play hard and keep them in check with all the egos and all the big-time dollar signs being thrown around. And I don't think Raheem Morris has done a very good job of that with keeping all the mouths fed on offense. Let's get Gervonta in here. 654 Roars the number. Good to hear from you, Gervonta. Always a pleasure.
Hey, what's going on? Why he talking about my dirty bird? What's going on?
Man, I hate the situation for you. I actually really like Michael Penix Jr. I think he's got a chance to be good. Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts. The O-line's playing well. The defense has got some dogs. What I'm going to ask you, Gervonta, what do you think the issue is with your dirty birds?
I just think that a lot of things they got to get together. But I think, too, this weekend will tell you a lot. I mean, I don't know if that was a slip-up game against Carolina. I mean, because Carolina just dominated them. You know, they came off that big win against, who was that, Minnesota?
Yes.
The second game. They was riding high. Baker shut them down the first week. I mean, they should have won that game. Missed the field goals. They would get rid of Koo and all that. I don't know. There's still a lot of football left to be on the table. But I tell you this, if you lose this weekend, everything you said on this show today will make you think, like, you fired the receivers coach and, you know, you got all these good defensive line and offensive line. It starts to be a lot of start reflecting on the leadership, the head man, because you could be 1-3 this weekend. And yep. Not only that, you could be 1-3 and turn around and got to play Buffalo. Could end up being 1-4. So it could be some firing going on in the middle of the year, but I'm still going to believe in the Falcons. I think he's coming out there. God bless him. Go Tigers.
Appreciate you, Gervonta. And, yeah, like, I actually think the more and more that I think about it, I think Raheem Morris's job's on the line this weekend, just to be completely candid with the audience. Like, I think his job's on the line this weekend, and I think the same could be said for Zach Robinson.
But here's my pushback. Who are you replacing him with on the staff?
Defensive coordinator. That's who I would have to go with. That's been the better unit. Ulbrich's done a good job so far this season. I just promote him as the interim, and I'd roll the ball out and call this season a wash. Like, this was a part of the reason that I was so critical of the decision to trade your first-round pick this year, because you were putting all the eggs in the basket of a coaching staff that had a meltdown last year, did not put their players in a position to succeed last year, had multiple clock, game, and management gaffes, benched a quarterback in controversial fashion. The new quarterback has never beat a team in his career where the opponent scores more than 7 points and has made 6 career starts. Why are you trading your first-round pick? It never made sense to me. For the 20, like, that's horrible value to go back up and get pick 26, even if Pierce is one of the best edges in the league. I still don't agree with the just thought process behind the decision, if that makes sense. So maybe it ends up panning out for Atlanta. Maybe they go out and win the game this weekend and Robinson gets out of the pistol and they start chucking the ball down the field, and maybe they hold it down against Buffalo in 2 Sundays, right? But, you know, with the way that I see this, it's a slippery slope. Because after the Commanders, you've got the Bills, as we alluded to. Then you're out west playing a San Francisco team that looks pretty darn good and hasn't lost yet. You do get the Dolphins to kind of catch a little bit of a breather, but then at New England, I think that's a team that's doing some things well right now. It's not an easy game to go up in cold weather in November. Then you got the Colts, you got the Panthers again, who own the living mess out of you. This could get ugly for Atlanta. This really could. And I hope that, you know, they're able to turn it around. And I hope I'm wrong about Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson, but I think this has disaster written all over it, and I see a reality in which there is a midseason firing after starting 1-5 with losses to the Commanders, Bills, and 49ers in quick succession in the next 3 weeks, and I think at that point Arthur Blank pulls the plug.
Currently is the 4th best odds to be the next NFL head coach fired. Right now, Mike McDaniel minus 150, Brian Callahan plus 150, Brian Daboll plus 300, and Raheem Morris at plus 900. Right after that, Dave Canales at 20-1.
Really? Yeah, no, they need to hold on to Canales.
With Stefanski, D'Amico, Ryans, And then you have Kellen Moore and Zach Taylor both at 50 to 1.
Kellen Moore literally coached three games. That's hilarious. That shows how bad the Saints are. We got about 90 seconds left in the segment, John, and then we'll flip things over to Grayson. We'll probably talk some NFL with Grayson as well. We'll talk a little Clemson.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to talk a lot about the NFL with Grayson because his quarterback stinks. His team stinks. Ramondre Stevenson just fumbled the football again. We're going to get into all that and more on the other side of the top of the hour break.
For sure.
I also like saying all this stuff when Grayson's already in studio, but he's not on headset and he can't get on the microphone because I'm not going to cut it on and let him have rebuttal right now. So this is perfect. We should do it like this more often.
I will say this on Raheem as the final thing to give the guy a little bit of grace. I'd be interested to see how things look different with a different offensive coordinator first. Maybe that's his saving grace, right? Maybe the sacrificial lamb is Robinson, and maybe they bring in a new mind on offense, and Raheem turns things around, right? But I don't know, man. I just think that this has disaster written all over it, and I've got a lot of Falcons fan friends that I don't want to have to I told you so, but we'll see.
Was it six games that Penix played last year?
He played in four last year.
Four?
Yeah.
So what we're seeing here is very similar to what we're seeing with Florida with DJ Lagway.
Yeah, he's going into career start number 8, which again was like, Falcons fans were like jumping down my throat. We're winning the division. You're crazy. I'm like, he started 4 games, bro. Grayson Mann up next with TigerNet on TigerNet Thursdays. Final hour of the program.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 50.